Alright, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin another incredible daf of Erchin ahead of us today. Today's daf is daf Dalid. We are picking up Emir Hashem on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis 3b, and we are picking up at Sakadai Itzterich Sakadai Chamina, four lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Alan and Sumarowitz in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Sue's father, Nathaniel Funeral, Nosim Ben Abitzcha Kalevi, Zichron Levracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Shem will have an aliyah in the family in the Chama. Thank you. And also a weekly sponsorship from Adam and Amy Goldman, as well as Hilly and Ellie Kagan, in honor of the DAF leaders, Moshe Abramson, for making it possible to tune into the DAF online. And of course, our monthly Talmud Torah sponsor, David and Roberta Schwartz, in honor of the members of the Shul for all of their work. Beautiful. Let's begin about saying, remember again, we left off in the middle of a discussion of Hakol Chayavin B'Tkiyas Shofar. So remember again, we had a statement in the Mishnah that says, everyone is obligated in Tkiyas Shofar, Kohanim Levi'im Yisraelim. So if you remember again, the Gemara said, all right, Pshita, obviously, if it's not Kohanim Levi'im Yisraelim, so who is it going to be? To which the Gemara says, we really needed to teach us about Kohanim. Teach us about Kohanim. To teach us that Kohanim are obligated in Tkiyas Shofar. Why? What would I have thought? I would have thought that who's obligated in Tkiyas Shofar? Only those who have Tkiyas Shofar once a year. But those who have Tkiyas Shofar each and every day perhaps should not be Chayv on Rosh Hashanah. Where do Kohanim have Tkiyas Shofar each and every day? Ultimately, again, at the Katim Bachatzotzros. To which the Gemara says, but one second, how? It's not the same thing. That's Chatzotzros, right? That's trumpets. Ultimately, again, this is a Shofar. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you. Itzdrich sakadait chamina. Hoyalutnan, since we learned, Shava hayovel Rosh Hashanah tkias ulubrachas. Well, that's very interesting. That Yovel is compared to Rosh Hashanah, both for tkia, for the sounding of the shofar, as well as for brachos. That ultimately, again, the simon that in Rosh Hashanah, we say, Malchias, Zichronos, and Shofaros. So too, again, on Yovel, we would also recite that type of Musaf. So says the Gemara, Tisim, says Yovel, Isim, says Rosh Hashanah. I would have thought, whoever is subject to the mitzvahs of Yovel is subject to the mitzvahs of Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, using that logic, Bahani Kohani, Hoel V'leslum, says the Yovel, since Kohanim do not have the halachos of Yovel. Rabbi said, now what does that mean? This nan, Kohanim Levim Mochrin Liolam, top of Dalid, Vegoalim Liolam. Both say the halacha is that Kohanim and Levim have the ability to sell their property forever and can redeem it forever. Rabbi said, now this is actually very interesting. What this means is as follows. If you look at, it's actually Rashi on Gimel Amud Beis, Rashi on 3b, Mochrin Liolam, Rashi says, Afilu Bishnas Hayovel Atzma, Imachru Karka Shalahem Mochura. But this is an interesting halacha, which is normally on the Yovel year, you can't really sell property. So it's interesting what happens to the real estate market on the Yovel year. So you can't sell property during the Yovel year. But however, again, the exception to that rule ultimately is Kohanim. Kohanim can sell property, Kohanim can sell real estate even during the Yovel year itself. Rashi says, "Afilu b'shnas Yovel atzma imachru karka shalahem mechura." If they sold property, it is sold. V'ilu gabi Yisrael tanya b'gimara perak basra u'b'shnas Yovel lo yimkar v'machar eina mechura. V'amos chozim v'makana tana mochun li'olam. So we'll say, so number one, Kohanim are permitted to sell real estate during Yovel. Not only that, if a golan in the olam, Rashi says, imachru sada golan oso miyad. We'll say furthermore again, if a Kohen sells land, he is permitted to redeem it immediately, even though Yisrael is not permitted to do so. So the idea is, on a technical level, so to speak, Yovel doesn't apply to Kohanim. So I might have thought, since there's this connection between Yovel and Rosh Hashanah, whoever has the halachos of Yovel has the halachos of Rosh Hashanah. Kohanim, quote-unquote, do not have the halachos of Yovel. Therefore, I would think that they are not subject to the halachos of Rosh Hashanah either. And therefore what? Therefore, do not blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah v'chiyuv, and tkiyas shofar on Rosh Hashanah, top of Dalid. So the Gemara says, second line, Dalid Amud Aleph, Nehi delesnu b'hashmatas karka b'hashmatas ksafim, even though it's true that Kohanim do not have the halachos of hashmatas karka, right? Shmitas karka and shmitas ksafim, b'shiluach avadim mia isnu. They do have the halachos ultimately of what? Of shiluach avadim. That if a Kohen does have an Eved, he does set him free during the Yovel year. So even though the Kohen may not have certain halachos that apply during the quote-unquote Shemitah or Yovel, and it happens to be, the Gemara here is quoting the concept of Hashmatas Karka, Hashmatas Ksafim, is a din in Shemitah, right? Is a din in Shemitah, not a din in Yovel. Tosas points out that since in order for Shemitah to work properly, ultimately, Yovel has to be intact. So therefore, again, we're kind of mixing and matching a little bit. But the idea is, even though a Kohen is not fully subject to the halachos of Yovel, since he has some of the halachos of Yovel, that's enough to put him in the parsha. And therefore, even if you want to make the relationship that only those who have an obligation in Yovel have an obligation in Rosh Hashanah, a Kohen is subject to some of the halachos of Yovel, and therefore a halacha lemaisa will be subject to Tekiyah Shofar and Rosh Hashanah as well. Beautiful. Hakol Chayav B'Mikra Megillah, Kohanim Levim Yisraelim. So we'll say the Mishnah says, everyone is obligated to read the Megillah. Kohanim Levim Yisraelim Pshita. That's obvious. Lo Tzvicha Libata La'avodasa. So we'll say, what's the Chiddush over here? The Chiddush is for the Kohanim to teach us that even if the Kohen is involved in Avoda, he still goes ahead and what? He negates the performance, or he stops the performance of his avoda in order to read the Megillah. Kidra Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Dorma Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kohanim Bavodasam, Ulevim Biduchanan, Vyisava Ma'amadon, Mevatlin Avodasam, Uboim Lishma Mikra Megillah. Because we'll say this, the Mishnah teaches us that Halacha Lameisa, whether a Kohen is doing the avoda, the Levi is singing the Shira, the Yisrael is doing the Ma'amados, they stop what they're doing and they come to go ahead and read the Megillah. So we'll say, so that's the Chiddush over here. I would have thought that maybe a Kohen ultimately was involved in Avoda trumps Mikra Megillah. Kamashmala, no. That even a Kohen in the middle of his Avoda stops in order to hear the Megillah. Hakol Chayavin Bezimun. I will say a very interesting halacha. Everybody is obligated in Zimun, Aminu Mezumun, Kohanim Levim Yisraelim. Pshita, to which the Gemara says, no, isn't that obvious? Lotzicha deka'achli kachim. Rabbi say, this is incredible. So I might have thought, maybe not. The Chiddush of Rabbi say is Kohanim. Kohanim, let's say in this case, the Kohanim are eating kachim. They're eating something sacrificial. Sagadait chamino va'achlu osama sher kupar bahem. Supposed to say, this is actually a fascinating idea. I might have thought that when a Kohen eats something sacred or sacrificial, that's not called a normative achila. Why is that not called the normative achila? Because ultimately the pasuk says, "Va'achlu osam asher kupar bahem." Those who atone for it eat from it. In other words, that the act of consumption of karbanos is in and of itself a chilek, a portion of the atonement. The act, the eating itself, is an act of atonement. So I might have thought only Jews could come up with eating as acts of atonement, right? So ultimately, again, I would have thought that perhaps, remember again, in order to be chayiv in Birkas Hamazon, you have to satisfy the criteria of what? V'achalta, v'savata, u'berachta. That's to be an achila. I might have thought the consumption of karbanos doesn't satisfy the achila criteria, because that's not called achila, but rather, what is it called? It's called kapara. Kamashmalon, v'achalta, v'savata, amrachmanda, va'isnu. To which the Gemara says, no, even though the consumption of karbanos is indeed kapara, that doesn't take away from the fact that what? That it is also achila. So because it's achila, interestingly enough, Kohanim would still make a mezuman if they are eating karbanos together. That's halacha number one. Now let's say it gets even more interesting. Hakol mitstarfin lezimun, Kohanim levim Yisraelim. Everyone can combine to form a mezuman, Kohanim levim Yisraelim. Okay, pshita, right? That's obvious. Lo tzvicha deka'achli kohanim truma o kachim, v'zar ka'achol chulin. Both say, listen to this interesting case. What's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is, what happens if the Kohanim are eating Truma or Kachim? They're eating Truma or Kachim, and the Yisrael is eating Chulin. So three people eating together, but they're not eating the same foods. Not only are they not eating the same foods, but what? The non-Kohen, the Zar, cannot partake of what the Kohanim are eating. So watch this. Sagadait Chamina, V'ibay, he's hoil v'ibay, he's rather meichel, v'hadei kohen lo matzi achel. So I might feel like this. The czar cannot eat of the truma or of the kachim that the kohen is eating. He cannot share, right? He cannot share the food of the kohen. So I might have thought that because of that, lo matzi achel kohen v'hadei, I'm sorry. So, ema lo litztarif. So I might have thought that since, what's a zimun? A zimun is where everybody's eating together, and again, what bonds them? What bonds them together is that technically speaking, they can all partake of one another's food. So I will say, so therefore again, halacha lemaisa, I would have thought, therefore what? In a case where you have non-Kohanim eating together with a Kohen, since the non-Kohanim, the Zarim, cannot eat of the Kohen's food, therefore they cannot create a mezuman. Emelo litztarif. Kamash, listen to this. Nehi dezar bahadei Kohen lamatzi achel, Kohen Bahadei Zar Matzi Achil. To which the Gemara says, it's okay. As long as the sharing could go even in one direction, it's fine. It's true that the Zar cannot eat of the food of the Kohen, but what? But the Kohen can eat of the food of the Zar. Right? The Kohen can eat of the food of the non-Kohen. So because of that, they have the ability to go ahead and form a Zimun. So I want to tell you, the Mishnah Berurah brings down an incredible halacha lemaisa application of this. What happens if three people are eating together? Two of them are eating fleishiks, one of them is eating milchiks. Right? They all eat together. Can they form a mezuman? And the answer is yes. Yes. Why? Because even though the guys who are eating fleishiks cannot share of the food of the guy who's eating milchiks, the guy who's eating milchiks has the ability to share of the food of the guy who's eating fleishiks. Mr. Burr says this is all assuming that the guy who's eating milchiks is not eating hard cheese. Right? If he's eating hard cheese, which Mamish has the din that you have to wait between milchiks and fleishiks, but assuming he's not eating hard cheese, halacha l'maaseh they could form mezumin. The Mishnah Berurah says, however, who should lead the mezumin? Who should lead the mezumin? The milchiks yid should usually lead the mezumin, right? Why? Because he's the one who has the ability to eat of all of the food of the people who is there. That mamish is gleaned from this halacha right here. Incredible. Hakol ma'arichin. We'll say everybody can make an erech vow. Hakol ma'arichin kohanim levim yisraelim. All right. Pshita. Obviously everybody can make an erech vow. So Amar Rava, lo nitzucha ela leben bukhri. We'll say the statement is really only needed according to Ben Bukhri. What a Ben Bukhri? Say, this not. Amar Rabbi Huda, heir Ben Bukhri biyavne. Ben Bukhri gave the following testimony in Yavne. Kol Kohen Sheshokel Eino Chote. This is actually really very interesting. Ben Bukhri said, any Kohen who contributes to half shekel has not sinned. Okay, so the Lashon is very important. Any Kohen who has contributed the half shekel, he didn't commit an Aveira. It's not a bad thing. Look at Rashi. Eino Chote. Rashi says, as we're going to see clearly, Ben Bukhri holds that a Kohen does not contribute machtzis ashakal. Right? That's what he holds. And we're going to see why. But he says, even though a Kohen does not contribute machtzis ashakal, if the Kohen ends up contributing, he has not committed an Aveira. Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Lo kein. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Ben Bukhri, what are you talking about? Ela. Call Kohen she'eno shokel chote. No. It's not the pshat that if a Kohen gives, he didn't commit an Aveira, which essentially means what? That the Kohen is pater of machtes ha-shekel. Whether Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says any Kohen who did not contribute machtes ha-shekel has committed an Aveira. You've done something wrong. Ella, so I say, so what's going on over here? Ella she'kohanim darshen mikra zel yatzman. Rather, what ends up happening over here in this discussion of Machtzis HaShekel is the Kohen made a drasha for themselves. So we'll say people make drushas for themselves all of the time. Right? Why? Because again, I'm like the Darshan, the Mechadish, the Posek Hadar, and I saw in the Pasek that there's something that suits my needs. So apparently everybody does this in their own way. The Kohanim made the drasha. What's the drasha? This is actually quite a fascinating drasha. Called Minchas Kohen Kadol Tia. Losocha. So we'll say, so the Pasuk says, any mincha offered up by a Kohen is totally consumed on the Mizbeach. It shall not be eaten. It shall not be eaten. Now we'll say, so again, so watch what the Kohanim said. They said, Hoyo, v'omer ushteha lechem, V'lechem apanim shelanu heim. So the Quran is like this. If we contribute machzis ha-shekel, that means we put money into the communal coffers. Communal coffers are used to purchase the barley for the omer, the wheat for the shtei ha-lechem, and the wheat for the lechem apanim. The problem is if we have a stake in that, then what? Then these items will not be permitted for consumption, but rather they would have to be totally burned. Therefore, again, halacha lamaisa, the Kohanim said, it's clear that what? We should not contribute matzis ha-shekel. This way, again, none of these items belong to us, and because they do not belong to us, they don't come from our money, therefore they need not be burned on the Mizbeach. So we'll say here the drasha. Drasha is actually a pretty solid one. It's wrong, but it's pretty solid. Right? So essentially, again, two parts to this. Number one, the Torah says any mincha of a kohen is burnt. Even though, remember again, we learned minachos extensively. What happens with a mincha? All that second from a mincha is put on the Mizbeach is what? Is what? Is the kmitza. That's all. The rest of it is consumed by the kohanim. The exception to that rule, if a kohen brings his own mincha, that mincha is totally burnt. The kohanim understood that to mean any carbon that we have an ownership interest in is totally burned on the Mizbeach. If we contribute machzis ha-shekel, then we're going to have an ownership interest in everything, including things like the omer, shtei ha-lechem, lechem aponim. If we have an ownership interest in it, then what? Then it has to be burnt on the Mizbeach. And yet Torah says these items have to be consumed, which clearly tells us that we should not give machzis ha-shekel. That was the logic of Ben Bukhri, and that's why Ben Bukhri said, ultimately, again, Kohanim don't give. If they give, they're not a chote. Okay. But Ben Bukhri, if you really are a purist and you really believe in this drasha, then if it's true that Kohanim are not obligated to go ahead and give machzis ha-shekel, then if they were to bring machzis ha-shekel, it would what? It would be like bringing chulin into the azara. It's unconsecrated money that does not belong to the Beis HaMikdash, so that's problematic. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not a problem. The Ma'isilei u'masra l'tzibur. Ultimately, again, in Ben Bukhri's model, if a kohen wants to bring machzis ha-shekel, what does he do? He brings it to the temple coffers, and what he does is he's makni it to Klal Yisrael. This money is a gift to Klal Yisrael. Then it's put, ultimately, again, in a temple coffer. So therefore, it's not considered to be like his machzis ha-shekel. He's giving it to Klal Yisrael. Sadai Chamina, I would have thought, I might have thought like this. Since the pasuk says by erchin, that what? Or any erchin, yeh b'shekel hakodesh, should be in the form of the shekel. Called the isei b'shekalim, isei b'erchin. I might have thought about the Torah is making a connection between erchin and shekalim. Whoever is obligated in shekel, or more specifically, machzis ha-shekel, ultimately, again, is subject to the laws of Erchin. V'hani kohanim hov lesnu b'shkalim lesnu b'erchin. And therefore, kohanim, who are not subject to the laws of machzis ha-shekel, as we just said according to Ben Bukhri, should not be subject to the laws of of Erchin. To which the Gemara says, Kamashmalan, that's not the case. Kamashmalan, so the Gemara says, Kamashmalan, that's not the case. Omle Abaye, so we'll say Kamashmalan, therefore the Mishnah tells us, Hakol Chayavin Be'erchin, right? What was the Lashon of here? Hakol Ma'arichin, excuse me. Hakol Ma'arichin, Kohanim Levi'im Yisraelim. That even according to Ben Bukhri, Kohanim are not subject to the laws of Shkalim. Nevertheless, what? They are subject to the laws of Erchin. El Omle Abaye, it's says, I need it for a different reason. Since the pasuk says, "Upiduyav mi ben chodesh tifte be'erkicha," since it says by pidyon aben the lashon of erkicha, so we'll say there's a juxtaposition therefore between what the halachos of erchin and pidyon aben. So I might have thought called the isei b'pidyon aben. Isei be'erchin. I might have thought whoever is subject to the halachos of pidyon aben is subject to erchin. V'hani kohanim hoyel v'lesnu pidyon aben lesnu be'erchin. Kohanim are both have no shaychus to what? No shaychus to pidyon aben. Therefore, I would have thought no shaychus to erchin either. Kamashon, the Mishnah tells me hakol ma'arichin kohanim levim yisraelim. Amrali Rava said elami ata. So Rava says like this. Essentially, what you're telling me is that wherever we see a mention of Erechin juxtaposed with another mitzvah, if you're not chayiv in that mitzvah, you're not chayiv in erchin. Or if you're not chayiv in erchin, you're not chayiv in that mitzvah. Amali Rava, elameata gabi ayil asham. So I say el asham, remember again, is the carbon that is brought. If someone deposits something with you, and you claim you do not have it, and you swear to that effect, and it turns out that you are lying, you bring this el asham, dechsiv, ve'es ashamo yavi la'ashem, ayil tamim, minatzon be'er kicha. So we'll say the Torah mentions lashon of erech over here as well. Hachanami, dechol isti isei be'erechin, isei be'er la'ashem. So again, are you going to say that what? Are you going to say that whoever is subject to the halachos of erchin, ultimately, again, is going to be subject to the halachos of Ela Asham, to which the Gemara says, Tumtum va'adrogenous delesnu be'erechin, lesnu be'el Asham. If that's the case, then Tumtum and androgynous, who are not subject to the halachos of erechin, should also not be subject to the halachos of El Asham. Ela Amarava v'itim Ravashi, it's tirich s'chadai t'chamin aholuksiv, v'amid v'lif ne'akoin. But say there's a different issue about Kohanim. See, the reason ultimately I might have thought that a Kohen is not subject to the halachos of Erechin is why? Because also when it comes to Erechin, the first step in Erechin is that, not the first step, I take that back. Torah speaks out of here as follows. If somebody makes an Erechin vow, but they're poor. So the Torah says, V'im machu me'erkicha, V'amidu lifnei ha'koin, V'herich osa ha'koin, Api asher tasig yadu anet, Anoder yarechinu ha'koin. But say, if you make an Erech vow, and you're too poor to execute, you're too poor to pay, they bring you before the Kohen, and what essentially happens, the Kohen evaluates how, based on your financial circumstances, right, you bring your tax returns from the last 2 years, right, the Kohen will decide how high tuition comes, right, the Kohen will decide ultimately again how much you have, how much you are capable of paying. So watch this. So I say, I might have thought that since there's a concept of being brought before the Kohen, it is only non-Kohanim who are brought before the Kohen, but not the Kohen who comes before the Kohen. Kamashmalan teaches me, Hakol ma'arichin, afilo Kohanim levim Yisraelim. Even a Kohen is subject to an Erech vow. And I will say, yes, it could very well be that you could have a situation of a Kohen who makes an Erech vow, is too poor to pay for that value, he will then be himself brought before the Kohen, ultimately for valuation. Good. So we'll say, what about when it says, Hakol ne'erochin? Everybody could be the subject of an erech vow. La'suye minuval umukashrin. That comes to include even a manuval mukashrin. What's the man? Remember, manuval means someone who's just physically repulsive. Mukashkin is someone who's covered with boils, also physically repulsive. So the Gemara says, Minhani, from where do I know this? The Tan Rabbanan, Be'erkicha Lahavi Erech Sasum. So we'll say, we're going to now read a very long brisa and go ahead and explain that brisa afterwards. So Be'erkicha, when the Pasuk says, in your Erech, Lahavi Erech Sasum, that comes to include even a closed Erech. So we'll say, we're going to see Erech Sasum means like this. In general, when we're making an Erechin vow, you don't just say, I obligate myself in an Erech vow. An Erech vow always has what? Always has what? Has a modifier. In other words, whose value? Because remember again, Erech vows, we're supposed to say everybody has, we saw this in Parashas Bichu Kosai, everyone has their own value. So generally, if you were making an Erech vow, you would say, Erki alai, right? My value is upon myself. Erko shel ploni alai. I'm pledging the value of Reuven. I'm pledging the value of a man above the age of 60. So that's you make an Erech vow. Erech sasan, I will say, means a case of where a person just says, I hereby make an Erech vow. An Erech vow. So we're going to see what we do with that vow. So we'll say, but the Gemara says, nevertheless, there is a concept that vow does work. That's called an Erech sasan. It works. Davar acher, be'erkicha, Erech kulo hu nosein, velo Erech ivarim. Further again, when the Pasuk says be'erkicha, erkicha means that when you make an erech vow, that vow devolves upon you in totality, and there is no such thing as an erech vow of a limb. Or as if a person says, I hereby pledge the erech of my foot, right? The erech of Reuven's foot. That does not work. That does not work. Rather, again, that becomes a complete erech vow. Yochol shani motza after Rosh Hashanah to Luyabo, you might think that what? But say, let's say I hereby pledge the erech of my head. Tamud Lomar Nefashos. There was the pasuk says Nefashos. Look at Rashi. Tamud Lomar Nefashos. But Nefesh Talarachmana Vimherech Rosh Hashanah to Luyabo. No sin erech kolon. But say now the good news is, if you make an erech vow regarding something that life is dependent upon, I hereby pledge the erech of my head. Right? So therefore, again, as we're going to see, that essentially is the equivalent of what? Making an erech of my body, right? Of myself. Tamalomar nefashos. Nefashos v'lo ames. Otsies ames v'lo otsies agos. You're supposed to listen to this. So therefore, the pasuk says nefashos. Now, interestingly enough, the only type of erech vow is an erech with living people. You cannot make an erech vow upon someone who is dead. So let's say Reuven passes away. I can't say hereby pledge Reuven's erech. Right, Reuven's erech. Why not, Rabbi Sai? Why not? He has no erech. We'll say, wow, what a musr. What a musr. Right? You only have an erech when you're alive. Once you're dead, there is no longer an erech. Whatever erech you had, that's the erech you had when you're alive. Life gives us the ultimate value. The Gemara says, I might have thought that what? Maybe it's only a dead person who doesn't have a value, but the goseis does have a value. Tamud lomar, vehemid v'herich. I will say this is pretty amazing. The pasuk says, vehemid v'herich. Ultimately, again, he will stand up and you will evaluate him. So what does that teach me? Chosh yeshno ba'amad yeshno ba'aracha. Whoever could stand up, ultimately, again, has an erech value. Whoever cannot stand up does not have an erech value. Therefore, the goseis who cannot stand up, even though again the goseis is alive for all purposes, ultimately again has no erech value. An incredible idea, also we'll say. Dover acher nefashos. When the pasuk says nefashos, only ela echad sherech echad. So we'll say, I only know that one person could pledge the erech value of another person. Echad sherech mea minayin. Well, say, how do I know that one person could go ahead and pledge the erech value of 100 people? Or else, we'll say, I decide I want to take my Daf Yomi sponsorship to the next level. So I decide, right, I'm going to go ahead and pledge the erechin of all the shir members. How do I know that I can do that? Talmud Lomar Nefashos. Therefore, we'll say, the pasuk says Nefashos in plural. In plural, right? I could go ahead and pledge the erech value of even a group. Dover Acher, another possibility is Nefashos, Amud Beis, Ainli Ela Ish Sherech, right? Ben Ish Ben Isha. I only know that a man has the ability to pledge the Erech value of a man or a woman. Isha Shericha Ish, Isha Shericha Isha Minayin. I say, I don't know that a woman has the ability to make an Erech vow. Whether the subject of that Erech vow is another woman or a man. Talmud Lomar Nefashos. But I say, so Nefashos becomes this catch all phrase that pretty much a man or a woman can make an erech vow regarding the subject of erech vow. It could be an individual or a group. The only limitation is what? It has to be someone who's alive. And not just someone who's alive, but what? Someone who could stand of their own, right? Of their own strength, not a goseis. Davar acher, another possibility is, nefashos l'rabos menuvel umukashchin. Say, another possibility is that nefashos comes to teach me that even a menuvel and a mukashchin could be subject ultimately again to Erechin, could be the subject of an Erechin vow. So the Gemara says, why would I have thought differently? Sheyachol neder berkecha. So let's say, because remember again, the Pasuk uses the Lashon of neder together with Erech. Kol sheyeshno bedamim, yeshno be'erchin. Any person, Abosai, who has a value. Now, Abosai, remember again, we spoke about this when we opened the Masechta. There's a concept of damim and Erechin. Erechin is an objective value that it has nothing to do with your skills, abilities, strength, and has everything to do with what? Gender and age. That's all it's based on. Damim means a value that has to do with the value you can get on the open slave market. So ultimately, I would have thought as follows. Now the mukashchin, right? The mukashchin, I would have thought like this as follows. Kol sheyeshno b'damim yeshno b'erchin. Whatever is subject to damim, or is whatever could fetch a value on the open market, is subject to erchin. And therefore, whatever is not subject ultimately again to damim is not subject to erchin. The Rabbi will say, now in general, a mukashchin, right, and a menuvel would not catch anything on the slave market. Why? Because just, again, on whatever the simple reason is, people would not buy slaves that who are physically repulsive. That's just the reality of it. So I might have thought that because they don't have damim, therefore what? They're not subject to the halachos of erchin. Therefore they cannot be the sabosei. What that means is, let's say Reuven the Mukashkin. Reuven the Mukashkin is a male between the ages of 20 and 60. What's the erchin of a male between the ages of 20 and 60? 50 shkalim. 50 shkalim, right? So I might have thought, again, that such a person is not subject to the halachos of erchin. Since halacha lemaisa, he's repulsive, meaning he doesn't have damim, right? If you, for us, just illustrate this. If you were to go ahead and say, I hereby pledge the value, not the erchin, but the damim of Reuven the Mukashkin, that's his name, right? Reuven the Mukashkin. So we'll say, what's the status, what's the value of that neder? Zero. Zero. So I might have thought that again, since he has no damim, he has no erchin. Since the Torah speaks about damim and erchin in the same pasuk, kamashmalon no. Kamashmalon, the pasuk says, so therefore the Talmud Lomar nefashos. But say, what does the nefashos come to teach me? Every single person has an erech value. Even if they have no damim value, they have an erech value. Beautiful. Vaya erkicha. The rabbos, which I will say, you understand, by the way, the incredible Moser in that. You see, Erchin is a value that is created by a Kaddish Baruch Hu. See, I will say, sometimes people don't have value in the eyes of other people. It just happens, for whatever the reason. Because we have a different metric by which we determine people's value. Even those who have zero value in the eyes of their fellow man always have a value in the eyes of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Even if you don't have Damin, you always have Erchin. So the Gemara goes weiter. Vaya erkicha l'rabos tumtum androgynous l'damim. Well, listen to this. So the pasuk says vaya erkicha. So that comes to include even a tumtum and androgynous for damim. Then I will say, remember again, tumtum and androgynous do have. Tumtum and androgynous are going to say are the opposite case of the mukashkin, right? The mukashkin has damim, doesn't have erchin. The tumtum and androgynous we're going to see have damim, but do not have erchin. Right? Sheyochol neder berkecha. Because I'm going to thought again. Remember, there's a juxtaposition between damim, neder, and erkecha. Kol sheyesh no berchin, yesh no medamim. V'chol she'en no berchin, en no medamim. I might have thought again, anyone who is subject to Erechin is also subject to Damim. But if you're not subject to Erechin, you're not subject to Damim. Talmud Lomar, vaya Erechicha, hazocher, zocher v'lo tumtum v'androgynous. Yochel, so we'll listen to this. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, by Erechin, the Torah uses the explicit lashon of what? Zocher and Nekeva. So if you are a Zocher and Nekeva, you're subject to Erechin. If we're not sure, you're not subject to Erechin. Yochel, lo ye be'erech isha v'al yu be'erech isha. Same of you would think that a tumtum and androgynous, maybe their Erechin is not like a man, but it's like a woman. Talmud Lomar, v'ya erkecha ha-zocher, v'im Nekeva hi zocher v'adai, Nekeva v'adois, below tumtum va'adrogenes. So we'll say, interestingly enough, now, even though we see a juxtaposition between neder, which is damim, and erchin, we see that relationship does not always hold true. So even you can have examples of people who are subject to erchin, not subject to damim, and vice versa. So for example, the mukashkin, right, the mukashkin, and the repulsive individual who are not subject to damim are subject to erchin, yet the tumtum and androgynous who are subject to damim are not subject to erchin. Amar Mar. So we'll say the pasuk says, be'erkicho, the rabbos erech sosum. So we'll say now we're going to go back and dissect the braisa. So the pasuk, so the Gemara told us before, be'erkicho, right, the rabbos erech sosum. So ultimately, again, that teaches me that even an erech sasum, we'll say an erech sasum ultimately means an undefined erchin vow. An undefined erchin vow. Literally means closed off. Undefined, where a person just says, I hereby undertake an erchin vow. No modifier, no qualifier, just an erchin vow. So the Gemara says, my erech sasum, what does that mean? Disan ya omer, erech sasum alai. Literally, again, we'll say a person says, erech alai, I hereby undertake an erech vow. And there's no qualifier attached to that. So what's the halacha, Rabbi Yosef? So what do you do with such a vow? No sin kepacho shebe erchin. So we'll say, so on a tachlis level, so like, what do I give? Well, one thing is clear, Rabbi Yosef, which is what? One thing is clear? Oh, you're giving. You're giving, right? That's clear, right? You open your mouth, you open your mouth to give to a Jewish institution, right? You did not qualify it. We'll figure out what you have to give. But one thing is clear, which is you're going to give. The kama, so we'll see how much do you have to give. Pacho shebeirch. So you're only on the hook for the lowest erchin amount. What's the lowest erchin amount? Shlosha shkalim. Three shkalim. Ve'ema chamishim. So we'll see, as we're going to see, three shkalim is the lowest erchin amount. Why? Why do we say that if you didn't qualify your neder, you're on the hook for what? The highest amount. But remember again, the highest erchin unit, ultimately again, is a male between the ages of 20 and 60. That's the highest erchin unit. So say 50 shkalim, that's what I should be chayiv for. Tafastim rubalo tafasta, tafastim muat tafasta. So I'll say in general, again, we see this concept in Gemara, which is that again, when we're not sure what to put you on the hook for, we're going to go with the amount that is sure, that is solid. So again, remember, one thing is clear, whether you're chayef 50 or whether you're chayef 3, you're certainly what? You're certainly chayef 3. You're certainly meaning ours. What is saying over here is 3 is a definitive amount that everyone will agree that you're chayef. 50, we're not sure. So therefore, let's just go with the amount that we're absolutely sure on, which will be the lowest amount. Tafasta merubo lo tafasta, tafasta mo tafasta. I ve'im a shekel. Well, if that's the case, there is a lower amount for erchin, right? The lower amount is a shekel. Where does a shekel come from? Dichsiv v'chol erkecha yeh b'shekel hakodesh. Then we'll say, now the truth is actually very interesting. This pasuk is actually talking about then when valuating erchin, erchin are valuated in the form of currency that is the shekel, the holy shekel. That's not an actual valuation. That's a statement of which type of currency you use. To which the Gemara says, no. That pasuk is actually talking about over here, hahu behesig yatu dichsiv. That's actually referring to, about, say, somebody who has extenuating circumstances. That's referring to the guy who made the erech vow. Then what? Figures out that he actually can't pay that vow. He doesn't have the means to pay that vow. We bring that guy before the Kohen and we evaluate his finances and figure out what he can pay. And when he pays, that payment ultimately, again, is made v'shekel hakodesh. V'alakra lamali. So what does the pasuk come to teach me? So if that's the case, then what is v'chol erkecha yeh b'shekel hakodesh? What does that actually teach me? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua lomar she'eno nidon behesig yad. But say what it teaches us is as follows: that he is not handled as someone who has impoverished circumstances. We'll say, so what this means is as follows. Here's what's very interesting: if someone goes ahead and makes an erech vow. Two cases. And he can't pay the amount of the vow. So what do? We bring him before the Kohen. The Kohen assesses his circumstances. The Kohen will figure out how much he has to pay. The minimum amount he's going to have to pay is what? Is a shekel. That's extenuating circumstances. If you make an unqualified erech vow, then what? The minimum amount you're going to have to pay is what? 3 shekelim. Why is that? Because halacha lemaisa, that is the smallest unit of erchin. So I'll say it's very interesting. So if you have financial hardship, we could even assess you at below the lowest erech vow. But if you make an unqualified erech vow, you're not going to be assessed like what? You're not going to be assessed as a financial hardship. You're going to be assessed as a regular vower. So because you're going to be assessed at a regular vower, your erech vow is locked in at 3 shkalim. My taima, kimefarishtami. We'll say, why is that? Because when you make an erech vow, we qualify or we articulate your vow even if you did not articulate it yourself. So if you make an unqualified erech vow, I hereby undertake an erech vow. So I'll say, ultimately, again, what does that teach me? How do we interpret that? We interpret that to mean I hereby take an erech vow of the lowest unit of erechin, which is 3 shkalim. Ikadam, I will say there's a reverse version of this. Amr Rabbiya, Amr Nachman, Amr Baravua, Nidam Hesigat. No, it's not true. When a person makes an unqualified erech vow, in fact, how do we interpret that vow, Rabbosai? We interpret that as someone who had a financial hardship. And when someone had a financial hardship, what's the smallest unit he's going to have to pay? Smallest unit? 1 shekel. So Gemara says, Pshita, what's obvious, ma'udatema, kimifarish damim. I am in a thought again that when he says, ultimately, I hereby undertake upon myself an erech vow and doesn't qualify it, that we would define it as the smallest unit of erechin, which is 3 shkalim, not 1 shekel. Kamash malon not. Kamash malon said that we define him as a hardship. So we'll say, Salach lemaisa, The Rambam paskins ultimately like the first approach, which is that if a person makes an unspecified erech vow, we ultimately assess him at 3 shkalim, which is the smallest unit of erechin, and we do not automatically assess him as a financial hardship at 1 shekel. Devar acher, be'erkicha, erech kula hu nosin, ve'ino nosin erech d'mei varim. So let's remember again, so the next part of the Braisa says, when making an erech vow, we only go ahead and assess him as a full erech, but one cannot go ahead and give the erech value of limbs. I va fixe le erech stam. So ultimately, again, I'll say about when he articulated the neder, he just said erech stam. Kari be erech be erkecha. Then also we understand ultimately again his statement of erechin in the context of normative erech vows. Yochol shani motzi davar shana shama tuliyabo. So I might have thought ultimately again I should exclude something, a limb of the body that life is dependent on. Talmud lomar nefashos v'lo asames. Ultimately again, it means nefashos. We'll say ultimately again, you can only go ahead and make an erech vow for something that is alive and not for the dead. Iva fixe, but we already use that pasuk for something else. Kari be nefesh nefashos. Ultimately, you know, we'll say I can make a drasha based on the fact that the pasuk could have just said nefesh, instead it says nefashos. Therefore, the extra nefashos is available over here for a drasha. Otsias hameis v'lo otsias hagoses. I will exclude the meis, but not the goses. There we'll say the pasuk says what? Ve'emid ve'erich, you have to stand up and you have erichin, which teaches me what Rabbi Osai, only one who can stand up is subject to the halachos of erichin. A goses who cannot stand up is not subject to erichin. Ha'achanami, to which the Gemara says, Iyachi, meis nami tefukalei ve'emid ve'erich. So again, Rabbi Osai, if that's the case, then you can learn out the exclusion of a mace from erichin from the same limud. Hamid v'erich, mace can't stand up either, just like a goses. To which the Gemara says, "Hachinami, you're right." Ve'ela nefesh nefashos lamali. So if that's the case, then why don't you need the drush of nefesh nefashos, which we used to teach me that a mace is not subject to erichin? I can learn out the fact that a mace is not subject to erichin. How v'hamid v'erich, you have to be able to stand up in order to be the subject of an erichin vow. A mace obviously cannot. To which the Gemara says, you're right, we're going to use nefesh, nefashos, for a different drasha later on. Dover acher, another possibility for this discussion. Nefashos, inli ela echot sheherich echot. Nefashos, the Braisa goes on. From the Lashon of nefashos, I only know, that if one went ahead and made an erech vow, referring to one, in other words, I made an erech vow for one person. I said, the erech of Reuven is upon me. Echad sherech mea minai. And how do I know that even if I went ahead and I took upon myself the erech value of 100 people, that such a vow is binding? Talmud lomar nefashos. Therefore, the Torah phrases it ultimately in what? In the plural. First wide line. Devar acher. Nefashos in the ela ish sherech ben ish ben isha. Ish sherecha ish. Vish sherecha isha minayin. I only know that a man can make an erech vow. How do I know that a woman can make an erech vow either about another woman or about another man? Talmud lomar. I'm sorry. Talmud lomar nefashos. Therefore, the pasuk says nefashos, and nefashos teaches me that what? Anyone can make an erech vow regarding any other person. The only limitation is what? The subject of the erech vow has to what? Be able to stand up on their own. That comes to exclude both a goses as well as a meis. So the Gemara says davar acher. Another possibility is nefashos lahavi menuvel amukoshkin. Aye, so maybe nefashos comes to teach me that a manuvel and mukashchin are included in the halachos of erechin. 1 second, v'ha'afikse lehanach, but you just use nefashos to teach me all of these previously stated halachos, to which the Gemara says, hanach lo tzrichi kra. These other cases do not really need a pasuk. Why not? My time, ki shakol, because ultimately, you're going to say, listen to this, because ultimately I could learn out all of these other items. The Gemara says, V'yavo kulam. So the Gemara says, because at the end of the day, all of these other items could be learned out on their own, as we're going to see. Ki etzterich kra. Ultimately, and when do I need the pasuk? L'menuvel l'mukashkin. So what's the thing? Gemara is not suggesting all of these other items. I could learn them out, right? From the shakal and taya. I could learn them out. They're all obvious. Really what I need the pasuk for is menuvel l'mukashkin. Why? So the Gemara says, I need the pasuk from Minovel Mokashkin. Vaya erkicha, the rabbos tumtum va'adrogenous ledamim. So I'll say ultimately again, Vaya erkicha comes to teach me that tumtum and androgynous, although they don't have an erkin value, will have a damim value. So lamalikra, lo yehe ela demei dikla. So we'll say, of course, tumtum and androgynous have a damim value. Right, after all, why should the tumtum and androgynous be any worse than a palm tree? And we'll say, what happens if you vow the value of a palm tree? What's the halacha? You're chayfaz. And we'll say, if inanimate objects have value, then of course tumtum and androgynous have value. To which the Gemara says, ilu amar dimei dikla milo yoif. Person were to say, I hereby take upon myself the value of the palm tree, shulim b'chayiv. Amarava Lomar Shinidun Bichvodo. So we'll say, actually, we'll stop over with Amarava. Rava is going to introduce a different concept, ultimately, again, of what we call Nidun Bichvodo. Ultimately, again, the ability to be evaluated based on one part of the body or the entirety. Mir HaShem will pick up over here tomorrow.